A good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Inland Empire and all the ships at sea and all the pigeons over Muskoy, the Muscatel capital of the world, and welcome to San Bernardino, California, the smog capital of the world. And tonight is a real blockbuster show because we have with us in studio Mr. Tom Metzger, who is the leader of the White American Resistance and even more famous now, and Tom will admit it, is his son John Metzger, who was on the Geraldo Rivera show the other day, drove up their ratings, and we have both of them in studio tonight here at KCKC Talk Radio. In fact, they both say they prefer coming on to smaller radio stations because you get to say something and people aren't always yelling, so you can't hear what other side says. Let's go right to John Metzger. How's your neck, John?
Fine.
Tell us a little bit about this thing on the Geraldo Rivera show, which you were on the other day. Start from the very beginning. How you got there, how you were invited, and what set this whole thing up.
Well, basically, it was a rating sweep for Geraldo. He was in tie for second place with another person back east, and he gave us a call like most of them do during rating sweep. So I figured the fix was in. He wanted something real controversial, and we went back there one time. We had a problem. People leaked out information that we were going to be in the city and even the hotel we were staying at, and we had problems going in the studio. So we came back 2 weeks later after they...
Well, why would they have been concerned about your being in the city?
Problems. This was a Jewish defense organization. About 40 of them attacked a taxi cab.
Yeah.
You mean back in
New York City. Yes, right outside the studio. In any case, so we came back, and initially we weren't going to do the show because obviously when people let out very important information, life and death information, that's not very good. In any case, they made it worth our while financially, and they just made it a pleasant trip. And so they convinced us after a lot of negotiations that it was well worth it. So we went back the second time, and that was the famous Geraldo incident. And basically they set the stage. They had some skinheads that were violently opposed to us in the front row. I thought that was strange. I thought it was strange that Roy Innes, who
is... Now, you're president of the what? The group?
I am. We used to be the Aryan Youth Movement. Now we changed our name over, and we made the full circle to the White Aryan Resistance Youth. We're the young section of my father's organization. We're going on 10 years strong here from 1979. In any case... But the Geraldo show, I could tell that with Roy Innes, he had his bout with...
Now, this is a big black guy.
Yes, yeah. Roy Innes from CORE, and he had his bout with Al Sharpton on the Morton Downey show.
Incidentally, I was on that show the night after he had pushed Al Sharpton off the stage.
Things are getting pretty violent on these television shows. All right, go ahead,
yes,
John.
Well, in any case, so I knew Geraldo's kind of cocky attitude, and my father's debated him before, and I saw through him. I found out what he's really like and what a shark he is. So I thought there'd be a problem. I thought maybe someone would stand up and yell. I never thought it would dissolve to the point it did.
Well, what happened? Give us a little bit of the scenario.
Well,
about what happened as to why the violence was precipitated on a national television show.
Okay, well, 5 minutes into the show, I called him by his real name, or at least I thought it was.
Geraldo's?
Yes.
He's not a Mexican-American, is he?
He's a half Puerto Rican, half Jewish, as far as I can recollect now. In any case, I made a comment to him about his former name. He got mad, came over, and I guess he tried to flick my ear or mess up my hair or something. So he physically touched me at that point, and I let that slide. So I figure, you know, in physical contact, even Morton Downey doesn't do that, you know, most of the time. And so I figured, well, he's setting the stage here, and he was hyping up the whole audience. And what had happened was they had small intros, about a minute intros, with the Rabbi Goldman of New York City. And he said some pretty derogatory things.
What did he say? What did the rabbi say?
Well, basically. He was, you know, we were talking about 1988, almost 1989 here, skinheads and the white working man's movement in America. And he gets off on some trip, as most of them do, back in the 1930s and 40s, alleging that the SS Nazi guards went out and took Jewish babies and slammed them up against walls and laughed while they're... You know, brains were spreading all over the place. That was a big insult. I couldn't handle that. the
no, they were German bashing.
In other words,
basically,
how old are you?
I'm 20.
You're 20, so you're a very young person.
And Roy Innes was calling me a hoodlum and a clown and so on and so forth. So I figured, oh, well, Geraldo's attacked me, called me a hate monger and a cockroach and a few other demeaning things. So I figured I'd go down to their level, too, and see how they could dish out an insult from me. And that's basically when Roy stood up. He claims I verbally assaulted him, which is something new to me.
So what did you say?
I called the rabbi a kike. Which, yeah. You know, I don't say things like that on the air unless you really make me mad. And Roy Innes, I called him an Uncle Tom, which everybody in the world basically has called him, and now he has to live with the title. I mean, when I think of Roy Innes, I'm more apt to say Uncle Tom because everybody has called him one, and that's all the Geraldo show has shown when he was being called an Uncle Tom. But in any case, that's,
Remember now, the blacks in Harlem call him Rent-A-Tom.
Oh yeah, Roy,
oh, yeah. And I called him Rent-A-Tom when I was on the Morton Downing show, and he was sitting right next to me, but he didn't swing on me.
Is this the same Roy Innes that attacked somebody on another show?
Yes.
Which show was that?
It's a Morton Downing show.
Oh, he attacked. Whom did he attack?
Al Sharpton, another black man, a black preacher from New York.
He was defending Tuana Brawley at the time.
I
the Tuana Brawley case.
Oh, Roy Innes is involved in that crazy.
Roy Innes was opposing the guy.
I see.
So, but Roy Innes sort of runs with the white establishment up there in New York City, and down in Harlem, they don't think that much of Roy Innes.
Called Rent-A-Tom.
And I know most of the Muslims I run into don't like him and like that.
Well,
so
you kind of like, you and Louis Farrakhan are kind of kissing buddies, aren't you, Tom?
I never got that close.
Well, I'm just joking,
I've never actually met him, to be perfectly honest.
I thought you were down at the Forum when he was talked down there a couple of years ago.
Well, yeah, but he was three blocks away in that Forum. You ever been in the back and the guy on the stage looks like he's in another state?
But you were still down there with Louis Farrakhan,
sure,
who is a separatist like you are.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. But obviously, there's a lot of differences too, but there are some areas of agreement, so we don't go too far with that, but he was a gentleman and they treated me very well. I've always been treated with the utmost respect by the Muslim people, you can't knock that.
Even the fruits of Islam?
Yeah, hey, those guys are pretty professional.
They might be pretty professional, but I insult them every other night.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about every Muslim on the street, but his close guards, his security people are very good at what they do.
Do you think that the fruits of Islam that guard Farrakhan are dealing in cocaine and heroin?
No. I wouldn't think so. There may be people down the line that get into that stuff, but from everyone I've ever met, they've been totally death on drugs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me give the telephone numbers here. Again, a show which I'm really excited about. Of course, I've had both Tom Metzger, who has been in the white movement for many, many years, and now John, his son, who has you guys, before I get, let me give the telephone numbers. I'd like to have you get in, those who agree or those who disagree. Ask some questions. Wake up out there, for crying out loud. I hope none of you are goosing yourselves with some dirty movie on television. I would hope not, because that would be sin. Somebody asked me the other night, how do you know what to say? I said, because God tells me. And they said, well, how? And God does tell me what to do, and I'm not crazy. You can call all areas of the Inland Empire, 877-1350, 877-5252, 824-1045, and toll-free from Highland, 882-2577. And John Metzger can now go on big television shows, and they have to pay you when you get on those. But he comes in here to KCKC, both John and Tom, because they can say this is a free speech station and we give people an opportunity, no matter whether we agree or disagree, with an opportunity to state their case so that you can listen to it. Call 877-1350, 877-5252, 824-1045, and toll free from Highland, 882-2577. This is Cecil Johnson, KCKC Talk Radio, 1350 on your AM dial, a yokel local radio. And I've been here for about 4.5 years now. I tell you what, maybe we should go to our first commercial words now, and then we want to get back to Tom Metzger and Geraldo Rivera fight. We'll be right back. And thank you for those words, and welcome back to Casey Casey Talk Radio. We've got two Franks on the line, but I'm going to ask another question before we go to them. Let me give the telephone numbers again. The Metzgers will be thinking I don't have a listening audience out there. You can call 877-1350, 877-5252, 824-1045, and toll free from Highland, 882-2577. There are some lines open. Let's get right back to John Metzger. I keep getting you and your dad mixed up there, who is the leader of the White Aryan Resistance Youth, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Tom is the leader of the White Aryan Resistance.
Right.
And has been very active in this for this work for a long time. Let's go back to the Geraldo Rivera show. And you'd called innocent Uncle Tom. Was he sitting next to you, or was he in the audience?
He was sitting next to me along with the rabbi, and they were about a couple of feet apart. And basically how the whole thing, I guess, devolved, so to speak, was that when they had insulted me verbally and verbally assaulted me, so to speak, I insulted them, and Roy got up. And at first he got up as to approach me, but then one of my friends said, "Sit down. Take it easy." But my friend did not. He was in the middle as a guest. He said, "Just sit down and cool down. You know, this is a debate." And then all of a sudden, Roy balled up his hands, his fists. He said, "You have to be kidding me." And he's just kind of swinging his arms around a little bit. And Roy's just totally going off the handle. And he's standing, towering right over.
Well, this came over TV. He's towering right over you, right?
Well, he went from me to my friend because he intervened. And then that's when I got up. And I was put my hand out a little bit to say, "Let's separate. You know, come on, take it easy," thinking I could do something. All of a sudden, his hand goes on my shoulder, my left shoulder, forcing me down to my chair. Well, I'm not going to have anybody forcing me down in my chair, no matter what they think. I was trying to break up a fight and a problem. And once he did that and he pushed me down a little bit, I wasn't going to take it. That's when I thrusted forward, up from my halfway sitting down really quickly. And at that time, he put his hands, two hands, in a chokehold, so to speak, around my neck.
That's why I ask you, is your neck sore?
No, it's fine. Yeah.
At the same time, of course, Cecil, Geraldo Rivera was saying, go ahead, Roy, go ahead. You can hear it on the soundtrack. In other words, he didn't say, "Roy, hey, this is debate, sit down."
It seems like the network would be legally responsible for anyone who is injured in a situation like that, especially if the talk show host is egging them on.
Yes. Definitely.
That's on the soundtrack.
That's on the soundtrack. They tried to bleep it out on one soundtrack, but it came through on the NBC soundtrack.
Okay, while Roy Innes was trying to strangle you, what else was happening?
Well, what had happened was the minute that he got up, our guys got up, and then half the audience, well, not half the audience, but people in the front row against us got up. So all of a sudden, very brawlish kind of attitude took place. And what had happened was he put his hands around me. That's when all 10 other people from our audience on the side came rushing to the stage.
Had bodyguards there for yourself.
Yes.
But Geraldo and all of this, a chair flew through the air and broke this poor unfortunate's nose, didn't it?
Well, basically how that happened about 5 seconds when Roy Innes was choking me, and very easily, first thing I did was knee him in the nuts, so to speak. That got his hands off of.
Was that why he looked so pained?
Right. Well, he did buckle over a little bit over that. And then over there, then one of our bodyguards came tooling through. And
How much does one of your bodyguards weigh that you have working for?
I believe he's about 280, and he's close to 6 foot.
And he's a former Trotskyite, is that right?
Yeah, and he's had some heavy street action. He come boiling through there like dividing the Red Sea, and he's the guy in the plaid shirt.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead with what happened then.
Well, what had happened was he came through, and the typical tactic is to throw a chair in the middle of a crowd to separate everybody. It was a very bad situation, and so it wasn't aimed at Geraldo. As a matter of fact, not only did it hit me a little bit on the shoulder, it hit Roy Innes square in the forehead, and bounced off and hit Geraldo, who had his arm up, turning the other way because fists were flying.
But remember, Geraldo was coming to Innes' defense. He
exactly.
wasn't going to try to get him off you. He was trying to help Innes choke you.
And so Geraldo got right in the thick of things, and the chair was flying around. The chair did not hit Geraldo in the face at all,
as the television has shown in the news.
Yes, and he has.
What really happened, and how do you know that the chair didn't hit him in the nose?
Well, because specifically, Well, he had contradicting statements in newsprint saying it wasn't the first chair that did it that was thrown. It was the second one. Well, the second chair was not a chair at all. It was with him and one of our bodyguards when they were brawling off to the side for about a half a minute and fighting. I mean, heavy action and fists flying. That's where he had his nose broken, from a fist connecting with his nose.
Well, not a chair connecting with.
Yeah, when in slow motion, we watched it many times. And when Geraldo, when the chair comes in, Geraldo is sideways to it, and our man comes through, comes barreling through to separate everybody. Geraldo jumps on our man's back. Our man back with his momentum keeps going across the stage. And then he flips Geraldo over his shoulders on the floor, and that's when our 280-pounder was knocking the hell out of Geraldo, with two or three security guards being drug around like rag dolls.
Well, he's lifting Geraldo up, basically. Geraldo threw the first punch while he attacked.
Well, isn't Geraldo kind of a little mush-tasted wimp?
Well, that's the thing. I asked Wyatt's a man's name. I said, Wyatt, what was it like to fight Geraldo? He said, he scratched me like a woman. He scratched him.
He looks like a woman with a mustache.
Yeah. But he's trying desperately to cut his losses by saying that the man didn't break his nose, but the man did break his nose.
Okay, let's take some telephone calls here. Let's go to Frank in San Bernardino, and then to the second Frank in San Bernardino. My guest for the full 2 hours tonight is Tom Metzger, leader of War, the White Aryan Resistance. This is a free speech station here, as all radio and television should be. And here in America, at least, all views are welcome. And also his son, John Metzger, who is just 20, I think, who is the counterpart of his father's organization, is the White Aryan Resistance Youth, which John Metzger. And you guys have been on all kinds of radio and television shows. You can't even. And Tom, you have, and we want to get to that, you have a television show which goes into 70 American cities, as I recall.
Not quite that many, but we're getting around real well.
Okay, we want to get to that. Let's take some calls here. Let's go to Frank first in San Bernardino. Frank, good evening. You're on with the Metzgers.
Yes, Cecil.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's Frank, San Bernardino.
Go ahead, Frank.
I'm going to ask those two guys, the Anglo-Americans. What do you guys want? Do you want all the Mexicans to leave, all the blacks, all the Jews, and what have you, and just leave nothing but white people here?
I think you got to look at it from our position once in a while, and that position is that the abortions, there's millions and millions of white children being aborted, and also our population increase is at 0 point now. So we're looking towards a situation where whites will be bred off the North American continent after so many decades. And so there has to be some change, and we have to figure our way out of this. It doesn't necessarily mean that everybody else has got to leave or anything like that, but we're going to be fighting for ours. And too many people include every white person with these rich white elitists up there that don't care anything about anybody. The average white working person is struggling just like anyone else, but there are people who say, well, whites, if we can squeeze them out, okay.
But that don't you think that's your fault? Because Hispanics and blacks growing over the years, they've had to have big families to work out in the fields to where the Anglo people would only get Billy and Susie, and that'd be it. It was
our own fault
for not breeding.
Yeah. It is our own fault for not breeding, but back in the older days, in fact, at one time, the migrant workforce here in California was 95% white. You can go back and look at the pictures. I have them from newspapers from the 20s and back then, and if you see the film Grapes of Wrath, I mean, the white working people, the white poor, they built this country, and they worked very hard. But what's happened is, they have listened to this crap about just having swimming pools and new cars and lots of TV sets and say, oh, who cares about the future? And so it is our fault, and you're exactly right. My worst enemy are those of my own household and my own race.
Yes, I know that, because since George Washington and Ronald Reagan, you can't name me a black president or a Hispanic president or an Indian president. It's basically your own fault.
White leadership has failed because white leadership has, in many cases, simply hoard after money, power, and greed. and not thinking of the racial future of their own people. And so, yes, most of our problems we have brought on ourselves. And so that's we have problems with black crime and Hispanic crime and other racial
white crime.
And white crime, too. But we have to look to the future. We're looking at a white civil war in this country is what we're looking at. It's ideological now, but I think it's going to heat up one of these days.
That's what I say. We shouldn't be afraid of Russia because the United States will have its war in itself right here among each other.
Well, when it comes down to the wire, that's how things a lot of times have to get straightened out. I sure as hell would rather straighten it out right here.
Yeah, but why is that necessary? Why can't all of the different ethnic groups in America live and get along together? Most of us seem to get along pretty well. We don't have to. You believe in, Tom, don't you, in creating states of the United States, which are all white. Farrakhan believes in creating black states. La Raza and other Hispanic ethnic groups believe that the Southwest.
I hear a lot of talking, but I hear very little action on the Hispanic or the black side of it. Farrakhan has toyed around with it. The white separatists are the only ones that are truly serious about this, and I have asked over and over for black leadership and Hispanic leadership to come to the table. But since the Hispanics don't feel they have to because they've got a natural land bridge where they can just come in here and have children, they don't feel they have to come
to
the table.
We owned part of the United States before the white man took it away from us.
Look, the Spanish owned it, and most of the...
Well, that's where my descendants are from, Spaniard Indian.
Yeah, but this... Well, let's separate the two.
No, you came because
yes,
that's where your people came from,
the
Spaniard Indian.
No, well, the Spaniards were a white race of people. Now, yes, they did intermingle with Indians and created mestizos and even Zambos, but basically they were a white people. Now, I know your history of the Indian oppression of the Indians by the Spanish in the Southwest and down there, but most of the time it was white Spaniards that run the show when they controlled California, and some Englishmen too that owned giant land tracts down here. There wasn't that much Mexican mestizo population in this area.
I know until it mixed. Right?
Pardon me?
Until it was intermixed with the Spaniard Indians.
Yeah, there was, and then it came, actually it began in real earnest about the time of the Sutter's Gold discovery in California. Then a lot more Mexicans did come into California looking for gold, but up until that point there was not that many here. There were quite a number of large landowners that were white Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how about the Indians and the Spanish. The Spanish were the most brutal towards the Indians, and when our army, the United States Army, came in under General Kearney into Southern California, the Indians welcomed him with open arms as a deliverer against the Spaniards, who had been very brutal to them.
Yes, and I don't know if none of your audience knows. Maybe I might be wrong, but I kind of doubt it. Spaniards had slaves way before the white men even thought about it.
Well, and of course the Muslims and other non-white races and have had slaves for thousands and thousands of years. Actually, the white man was real late on the business of slavery, and he wasn't in it that long compared to the Muslims and others. In fact, some of the Muslim countries just abolished slavery here a few years ago.
But what do you think about these blacks trying to have the white people reimburse them back from the slave days, from their ancestors, their labor and what have you, for the white man to pay them compensation now?
Well, then I think we're getting into a big problem because...
Well, you did it with the Japanese.
Well, the Japanese wouldn't have got a dime if it was up to me.
I know, but that comes back to where it's your people are doing it.
I know that, and I tell you who should have got that money, and that was the sons and daughters of the men who died in Corregidor and Okinawa and died in those Jap prison camps over there. They should have got the money.
That was my ancestors that died too there.
Yeah.
Hispanics and blacks and whites and Japanese even died there.
Anybody who fought there should have got some of that money. I agree on that.
Okay.
I'm a firm believer. I don't want nothing from the white man. I don't want to get the job because I'm Hispanic. I want to get the job because I can do the job. I don't want nothing from nobody.
Well, that's good.
And
I have a high respect for someone like that.
Frank, you work as a laborer, as I recall, don't you? And
yes.
Frank, one of my regulars. And Frank, I want to thank you for your thoughts and your contributions here tonight.
Have a nice night.
And you and Tom, talked very intelligently with one another. Thank you.
Well, I am a racial separatist, and when I gave a speech back in the late 70s at the border, I had that speech printed in Spanish and English, and we handed it through the fence to the Mexican people on the other side. And the gist of that message was that we understand your plight in Mexico. We understand the oppression you live under. But we have problems up here, too.
Well, I was born in the United States.
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the people who continue to come up. But I said, we can't allow you to overcome our situation up here. And I said, but we would like to cooperate with you to overthrow the mess you have in Mexico.
Yes, I agree. I agree in bringing in the immigrants. Like I've told Cecil in the past, I know for a fact there is wetbacks, or you can call them illegals or whatever. They'll come in here if the job's paying $9-$10 an hour. They'll drop it down to the standard, down to $3-$2 an hour. Well, hell, that's hurting me.
Well, the thing I hate about it is middle class and upper middle class whites that are creating a new plantation system. They all got to have a wetback or a Mexican out there doing their lawn while they sit there and drink mint juleps. And they got
the old fat pig women in Beverly Hills and so forth.
You know, if there was a law that should be passed, a man would have to do his own work. And if white people can't do their own work, they shouldn't own the land.
And thank you, Frank. We got to move on.
All right, later.
Thank you, Frank.
Bye.
Okay, that was Frank in San Bernardino. Let's then again go to another Frank, and then to Flo, and then to Johnson and Rialto. Let me get the telephone numbers. This is the show tonight. My guests for the full 2 hours are happen to be Tom Metzger, the longtime leader of the White Aryan Resistance and former head of the Klan at one time, weren't you, Tom, years ago?
Yes, up until 1980.
1980, and then you broke and formed your own organization. And 877-1350, and John Metzger, who is his son, who is very active, who is the national leader of the White Aryan Resistance Youth. And you can call 877-1350, 877-5252, 824-1045, and 882-2577. And whether you agree or not, it's not often that local tin can wire radio can get guests that have appeared on national television shows. And we'll be, I tell you what.
Well, the reason we like to come on this show like we do all local radio shows on, because it's almost a dying breed. We got to watch it in this country, because there's a lot of enemies of total free speech in this country. Amen. And they're like wolves outside the door.
And that's why the guy that said he's going to buy this, the first thing he's going to do is fire me.
Yes.
A sodden drunkard.
Yeah. There's some people in this country that are hypocrites. There are a lot of people who say, well, I believe in free speech, but I don't believe in your free speech, you see. And we have never challenged other people's right to free speech. And
have you guys ever gone on a university campus where they would let, say, Roy Innes talk as long as they wanted to, but when you got up, they booed you off the stage? Has this ever happened to you?
Yes, basically with my father, yes.
In other words, there's free speech as long as it's a university or whatever brand of free
speech. When I ran for United States Congress, I had the largest crowd ever down at the university there at San Diego, but the extreme leftist Marxist got out front with big horns and everything to drown out everything I had to say, and then they started throwing Coke bottles and dimes and quarters and everything else and rocks, and they had the cops usher me out and my bodyguards. So a lot of people don't really believe in free speech. If my ideas are so bad, they shouldn't worry about them. Nobody's going to listen to them anyhow.
Well, the university campuses really do not believe in freedom of speech, do they?
Well, we were on Fullerton campus when we were started, Race and Reason, and we were on there for 2 years or so. And then some people started making a big kado about it, and we had to move our Race and Reason off the university campus.
Now, this is your television show, which goes into 50 cities.
That's right, our television show.
I want to talk about that a little
bit. Now, it's interesting, and I must say this. The lady who was the president of the Fullerton College there was black, and she supported our right to free speech. And so did, I believe it was Martin Luther King's daughter came out and supported our right to free speech. So obviously there's two sides to that coin too.
Okay, and thank you. Let's have a word from some of our good sponsors. Then we'll be right back with Tom Metzger and John Metzger, and they'll be on for the full 2 hours this evening. Hang on. Most interesting show. Call in and give your thoughts and questions. battle. Let's take some calls here, shall we, guys? Did you have something more to say?
Well, this free speech thing, and a lot of people take it lightly, but we're moving towards an Orwellian-type society, I believe, in a more oppressive central system to where people are just denied rights to speech, and they'll make laws, and they'll call them hate laws and all kinds of things where you can't print what you want to print or criticize who you want to criticize. Of course, they're going to do it all in the name of goodness, humanity, and brotherly love, you see. And that, I think that's the way the dictatorship will come. Not from the so-called right wing this time. It's going to come from the people crying brotherly love.
Interesting. Let's take some calls here. Let's go to Frank, then to Flo, then to Johnson and Rialto. Tim, I think, is Tim or Tina. It looks like Tim in San Bernardino and Linda in Redlands. Let's go right Frank in San Bernardino. Frank?
Yeah, I got a question for your group.
Yeah, go ahead, Frank.
Okay, what it is if they're so powerful and everything, why don't we hear more about them? And why don't they tell us what they stand for?
Well, we've been on show several times. You can find out what we stand for. We have various organizations on universities and colleges and high schools. People shouldn't rely on the media to find out what's happening in the United States or the world. They should be involved with their community and really find out what we're doing. We have San Bernardino, this area here. We have a lot of activity going on here, especially in Southern California. And basically, I don't approve. I don't think it's right for people. Just because we're not in the newspapers doesn't mean that we don't have problems or that we have groups such as ours.
We also publish a 16-page tabloid newspaper that goes out to thousands of people every month, besides our Race and Reason TV show that reaches millions of people across the country. Plus, our associates hand out a lot of literature in the street, and any kind of question a person has, they can call in and ask the question or write in and ask the question. So we're doing everything we can within a working man's budget. We do not have any support from the fat cats because we get very tough on the fat cats and they just don't want to give us money. And we pay taxes too. We're not a non-profit outfit. So that's the way it is. If we owned a 50,000 watt radio station, you'd hear our program, our platform every day of the week, or if we owned one of the major TV stations. We cannot even buy advertising on any radio station that I know. We can't buy advertising on any TV station I know because we've tried it. And so that sort of limits you.
Well, what about the newspaper? I mean,
the newspapers will not take our ads. Right here in San Bernardino, over 7 or 8 years ago, they refused to take our ads. They've never taken our ads since. So all these people, in fact, they sort of laugh at you and say, well, if you want free press, buy a newspaper. And so a lot of Americans don't realize that if the establishment does not like what you're saying, they won't let you buy time, and they use the 14th Amendment as their excuse that we can't make them be in involuntary servitude. See, only 26 corporations in the United States control all the media. And in Washington, D.C. today, you have less daily newspapers than you have in Moscow and Russia. Most newspapers now are becoming, each town has got one newspaper owned by one family, or a morning and an evening paper, and you only get one line of thought. And that's the trouble in this country. Thought control is being more and more controlled by less and less big corporations.
Or is it maybe because people are afraid of what you stand for?
I'm not talking about just us. I'm talking about anybody who wants to have a freer exchange of ideas. I'm saying that you're seeing a time come in this country when less and less people are going to be controlling more and more of the wealth, and that's the TV stations. Now, a lot of people don't know something that I researched, and that was they wonder why Ronald Reagan got so popular so quick. Well, Ronald Reagan signed a bill after he went into office the first time that lengthened the licensing agreements with TV stations and, I believe, radio, and almost doubled the length of time before they came up for renewal, which essentially doubled the worth of about every radio and TV station in the United States. And when he did that, suddenly he became the darling of the media, and the media, you notice, treated him real well after 1980. When he was trying to run before 1980, if you remember back 5-10 years ago, they hated Ronald Reagan. All of a sudden, he was their darling, and that's one of the reasons why.
Well, Well, you know, what I'm wondering, though, is, you know, here's an organization that, from what I've been hearing about it a little bit, of course, but I don't understand why, you know, we got a free country, we have a right to say what we want, do what we want, and yet you people are denied your access to the newspapers, you're denied access on their, different televisions and so forth, stations like that. Well, that's taken the right of free speech away from you. I mean, they let the Spanish talk, they let the black talk. Why can't they let the whites talk?
Well, I don't know. I think it's because our white leaders are afraid for us to talk, because we're talking about changing the system. We're talking about getting away from economic determinism, and all we care about is the buck. We're trying to get America back to something that, or go forward, for that matter, to something where we care about the future. We care about conservation. We care about what kind of a country and a land we're going to leave to our children. But the big boys in power, all they care about now, the big corporations, are simply what they can make and ship out of the country. And so obviously they don't want white people like me talking, because they know that if we get to enough people, there's going to be a big change in this country.
Well, it might sound strange, but actually I believe to a degree that suppression and losing rights directly coming from special interest groups in the United States government that comes down on us, it forces us to explore different roads and paths to take to get what we want, and everything is totally legal, and we have to go out in the streets and talk to people.
But what is it that you want, John?
Basically, what we want is just to have our little place to where people such as ourselves that feel that, you know, we're very jealous of our history and our culture and our civilizations and our past, and we believe that just like a lot of other racial groups, if not all, especially the Japanese, that we need to preserve it. And we feel very threatened and fearful when all of a sudden you go to L.A. or major cities in the United States, and not only different languages they teach in school, but all of a sudden they don't teach you the things that I want to learn about my people. It's always based on slavery, the Holocaust, World War II, and so on and so forth. That's not fair. So actually, it's we're out on the streets and recruit a lot of people. We have... you know, we have our hotline to talk to, and we have several phone numbers.
What is the number of that in case someone wants to call you?
This is an update changed every 3 days. It's area code 619-723-8996.
You know, also, the white working man has taken the brunt of the most rabid statements and propaganda for the last 20 years, and we're fed up with it. We saw the Archie Bunker crap. And we saw all these things, and we saw a senator here a few weeks ago almost lose his job because he said, hey, I used to watch Amos and Andy, and the blacks went crazy. And I was on a radio show the other day, and I said, hey, I used to like Amos and Andy. I never thought of anything bad against black people any more than it was against, you know, Gildersleeve and all those guys and Fibber McGee and Molly. They were always... The white guy was the jerk. I mean, and now on TV, every ad, the white male is a jerk. If you, well, you just watch these TV ads, and a white man's bad, white man's this, white man's that, but they forget that almost every great invention, some of the greatest creations in the whole Western Europe, and everything we take for granted, a majority of that was created by white people.
Okay, thank you, Tom and Frank. We got to move on.
Could
you make it fast, please?
Okay. Yeah. Why is it that a white man can't get the things he needs, but a black or a Hispanic or some of these other ethnic groups, they can get anything they want, but when a white man goes to get help, he can never get it?
Well, it's there is some kind of a phony deal going on, because I know that these turkeys at the top really don't care about black people. That's a myth. But I think they believe they can use the black people easier than the white working people, and they are using them or trying to use them. There's a lot of black people that understand
this. But there are more white people on welfare than blacks.
Of course, white people have always been the largest number of poor in this country, but you couldn't get Bush or any of these guys to say, hey, white people have trouble. They hate even say the word white. See, even to say white is considered racist now, is almost. You got to watch it. If you don't say things just right and grumble at the feet of everybody, then you're a racist. Well, you have to get to the point, like many people are in this country, say, look, I'm not going to shut my mouth up just because you call me a racist. If you mean I love my people, I'm going to fight for my race and the working white people of this country, yes. If you mean that I hate everybody else, no, we don't hate everybody
else. Okay, thank you,
Frank.
Good evening. Bye, Frank. Okay, let's have our last commercial words for this hour. My guest this evening for the full 2 hours is Tom Metzger, the national leader of White Area and Resistance, and his son, Tom Metzger, who is the national leader of the White Area and Resistance Youth, who was just on the Geraldo show, and one of John's bodyguards in slow motion busted Geraldo's nose, not a chair. This Geraldo is some kind of a wimp. We'll be right back after these words. So you're getting some good
calls. I'll tell you some good information on Geraldo. You know, he got started, he was an attorney. And he worked for the radical Puerto Rican groups. He defended the Puerto Rican terrorists. Okay?
Is that his real name, Geraldo Rivera?
No, Jerry Rivers is his name.
I want you to bring that.
Jerry Rivers is his name.
Yeah, they call it the Jerry Rivers show.
They brought him in to CBS, and they said, this Jerry Rivers ain't going to go. You got to have a Hispanic, because the Hispanic thing was in then. So. And when he went to college, believe it or not, he went by Geraldo Rivera and tried to pass as an Italian.
So he is a complete phony.
Jerk.
Yeah.
A total phony.
Okay, would you hit that?
Yeah. Well, I called him by his real name on the show, and he came over physically touched me. So
he's very sensitive. Very sensitive. About that.
By the way, he's had his nose broken before, and from what I heard,
it was by a woman.
It was supposedly by a woman biker, Hell's Angel, over in New York City.
I'll tell you this much: you guys brought his national ratings up. Yeah. He owes you.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
he really does.
Well, that subliminally, though, went into the brain of every average white working guy and woman out there in the audience. When they saw him choking John, that registered back here. They're not going to forget that.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what registered in my youngest son's mind.
I've had thousands of calls and letters to people, and even some of them don't agree, but they say that was uncalled for. Basically, they did what they accused us.
See, you're such an innocent-looking young guy, too, which helps, you know. That's the way my son looks, a little bit like John, and my youngest son. And thank you for those words, and welcome back. I want to ask you before we go to Flo, just one question, Tom, is Geraldo Rivera, is that his real name?
No, Geraldo's real name is Jerry Rivers, and Geraldo used to be an ambulance-chasing attorney down in New York there, and he got into politics defending Puerto Rican terrorists in New York. So he came to the eye of one of the liberals in the CBS industry, and they brought him in. Now, when he was in college, he used the name Geraldo Rivera trying to pass as an Italian. So then when this Hispanic thing got popular, you know, for affirmative action, all that, CBS picked him up and said, well, you can't use the name Jerry Rivers. You have to use Geraldo Rivera, which is in Spanish Jerry Rivers.
Well, what is his ethnic background?
His father is Puerto Rican. His mother is Jewish. His mother's name is Lillian Friedman. She lives in Florida. And so
you're going to disappoint a lot of my listeners, because a lot of them thought that Geraldo was Hispanic. He's not, is he?
Well, I mean, Puerto Rican, he'd be half Hispanic. But he has there's a lot of Hispanics who would argue with that, though.
I think they would.
And on his hand, though, he doesn't have any symbol of Puerto Rico. He's got a Star David tattooed on his hand.
Which doesn't endear you to him for folks from that group.
No, I mean, he should have a Stars and Stripes. I don't think.
Hey,
okay,
I'll go for that. Let's go to Flo. And Tom, make sure you get in here. And John, make sure you get in on this, too. Flo, good evening. Flo, now you got to turn down your radio because I'm hearing the repercussions of my own voice. Flo, you're on the air.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
I just want to ask you a question about these here Muslims. I had an occasion to note a black boy. I always call him colored boy, or gentleman he was.
Yes,
I like the word gentleman better.
About 24, and I lived in Los Angeles, and he married a Muslim girl. And he used to look like a piece of beefsteak every day. You know, she used to beat him up. And I just wondered, are they supposed to be a sort of a kind of a stricter something?
Well, that's not the role models that I have seen. Now, admittedly, I'm not an expert on the Muslims, but I met with one of the top men next to Louis Farrakhan in Washington, D.C. a few years ago, and some of his lieutenants. He brought his son along with me, and they were extremely well-dressed, extremely polite, and all these things, and they seem to support a very straight family life, no drugs, no alcohol, and all this. However, you know, Muslims, you know, are like Christians or any other faith. You got your people that don't go by the rules, but they still call themselves Christian or Muslim.
But they're not colored people.
Yeah, they're called the Muslims. Black Muslims are black, yes. But I don't think that it goes along with their ideology to beat up on wife, to beat up on the husband, or right, vice versa.
Well, I just wondered because I thought maybe it just might be an isolated case.
But here again, I think that probably should have a Muslim representative talk about that because I'm surely not an expert on their movement.
Okay, Flo, thank you for your call. All right, let's go to Johnson in Rialto. Johnson in Rialto. This could be the guy that belches here. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, good. You're not the guy that burps. Good.
No.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
I want to talk to the Farrakhans.
There's no Farrakhans here.
No, these are the Metzgers.
The Metzgers, yeah. Oh, I don't know. Metzgers, yeah. No.
Are you listening to the radio?
Yes.
Well, you're listening to what's being said 6 seconds later, so it's probably confusing. You should probably turn it down.
Yeah.
Okay, turn it down and race back.
All right, I want to speak to the Metzgers.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I want to speak to the Metzgers.
They're waiting for you.
We're here.
Yeah. Okay. Now, look, I don't like these blacks no better than you do. But I would like to know this. What do you hope to accomplish with this?
Well, I hope to accomplish survival, survival. I don't know why white people have this idea in their head that they're in a majority. You've always been a minority in the world population. You're about 10% of the world population.
Yeah.
But white people walk around like everything's always going to be the same way. You've got to start looking out for yourself.
I know it.
And your leaders don't care about you, so you need to organize. This doesn't mean you hate everybody. It just means this is a fact.
Well, what are we going to do about it?
Well, you got to get involved like we are. That's what we're doing. We get involved.
I would like to get involved.
Okay. Well, just write us at P.O. Box 65.
Get a hold of Cecil, huh?
Yes.
Well,
get a hold of Cecil.
I'm not saying I agree with everything the Metzgers say because I believe we
Well, the first thing people have to do is like anything. You have to admit there's a problem. Now, once you admit there's a problem, then you are, all your friends around you, you're the best person to go to your friends, talk to your friends, and say, hey, look, let's look out after our own situation for a while. You're supposed to love and take care of your family.
Is that box 65?
Yes, that's box, P.O. Box 65.
Fallbrook?
Fallbrook, California, 92028. But we need people to get involved here. I hear a lot of complaining and whiners out there, although, a lot of it's justified. Get involved or else your opinion really doesn't mean anything.
Now, a lot of white people, in fact, a very lot of white people, I consider brain dead, to be perfectly honest. I don't know what the hell's going to wake up some of these people.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to wake up. Listen, it ain't just now. I'm 70 years old, and when I was youngster in back in Arkansas, I swear to God, the blacks had all the best jobs.
Oh, come on. You know better than that.
1,000 people.
And we've run out of time. I'm going to have to say goodbye. Thank you. Okay, that was we're out of time. We're going to come back with Tom Metzger, national leader of the White Aryan Resistance, and Tom. We'll be right back after this ABC News update. He was a little bit out of it there.
He
was saying what he really felt.
I think he was juiced.
How's it going? A lot of the calls are.
Yeah, you better change your name.
We got a lot of calls back
to talk
here.
To the Farrakhans.
I was with Tom Jr.
That's not true. Would anybody like water and coffee?
That water sounds like a good idea. If I drink coffee.
Yeah, you might want to stretch. Geraldo Rivera show where Geraldo purportedly got his nose broken by a chair, but in fact it was one of John Metzger's bodyguards who weighs 280, whose fist comes flying across the screen in slow motion and break Geraldo, whose name isn't really Geraldo, as Tom Metzger said, but his name is Jerry Rivers. I wish they'd call it the Jerry Rivers Show. This guy isn't a Mexican-American even. I think he's flying under false colors and is a real bum, like that guy Morton Downey, who you said is what, Tom?
Oh, Morton Downey is another phony. Morton Downey was so far to the left in the old days you couldn't believe it. He was worked for the Justice Department during the civil rights days. He went down south and was doing all he could to screw up white people in the south. And Morton Downey, just in the last couple of years, has put on this cloak of a conservative, and he's not a conservative.
He's a liar then, isn't he?
He's just another one of these people who are going to do whatever they can do to make some money. The man who created that show is the one who created MTV with this rock and roll stuff, rock and roll video. And they estimate they're going to make $100 million this year. And, of course, out of those profits, Morton Downey gets half. But I don't think his health's going to hold out. He's smoking four packs of cigarettes a day, drinking like a fish. And I've seen him double up two or three times on the stage.
Well, I have a feeling that he will be dead by the year 1990.
I do, too.
The feeling I get about
him. I think he's very sick right now.
Okay, and I think that the devil is calling him home. Surely he's not going to heaven. But what I hate are these phony talk show hosts are acting like there's something that they aren't. And let's have our first commercial messages for this hour, and then we're going to go to Tim, Linda, Francis, Stuart, Walter, and Frank. Where is that pink old Kremlin Keith tonight? That swine. We'll be right back. See, I call the second in command here tonight a sodden drunk, which is what he is. I'm going to bust him before I leave this radio station, I'll tell you. I'm going to ball up, give him a real good working over.
One thing
I'll get thrown in jail.
You're going to Geraldo him.
You should bring out is we never ask these guys to go on our show. They always act like, oh, man, and they are pleading with all time to come on the show.
Yeah.
They call us and call us and call us. We don't call them at all. Now, a lot of people would think it's the opposite. Put me on the show, put me. We never call them.
Well, that shows that they want you.
Yeah.
And make those suckers pay.
Oprah Winfrey, too, I could talk about her. She's personal on the show, but she's a real cool fish off the show. She doesn't talk to anybody, doesn't like anybody off the show. But she's got a fine staff. Phil Donahue was one of the most gentlemanly talk show men.
Yeah, he's a pinko. I'd like to butt
well,
him. A little faggot.
All I'm saying is that Phil was more polite and more gentlemanly to us than the others.
He can afford to be at $2 million a year, I guess.
I guess so. Now he's got Marlo Thomas. She's got some bucks, too.
I hate white faggots that are wealthy, and I'm sitting here not getting paid. I'm doing this as a public service, actually, now. This is going on 4 months and I haven't been paid.
Yeah.
The only one at the station that's foolish enough to stay on the air when he's not getting paid.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really angry about it.
Well, don't get mad, just get even.
I will. It's
I thought the owner liked you, the current owner.
I don't think so. I'm not like, the people I work with, like JW, they're neat guys and so forth. The disc jockeys are all right, but the management of this station is the worst in the United States.
Hmm. We know the one man that...
We got it. Welcome back. This is Cecil Johnson, KCKC Talk Radio 1350 on your AM dial, the only local talk show host in America's two largest and fastest growing counties. Shows you what morons the people in their radio stations are in this area for not realizing the impact of talk radio, local talk radio especially. And of course, I'm going to get bounced out of here pretty soon, so not this evening, hopefully, Tom. And let's go right to the telephone. Let's go to Tim first and take a lot of calls here, and I'm going to shut up for a while. Tim in San Bernardino. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, is John?
Yes, it's John.
Hey, John.
Mm-hmm.
I go to a high school here in San Bernardino,
mm-hmm.
and I have a lot of racial comments, slurs that are really unnecessary from blacks to me. Every day, they come up in gangs and push me around and, and I'm not putting up with it. And, what I decided to do is I use computers a lot, and I have a lot of friends, and we're called anarchists.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't put up with no bullshit.
That's good.
And, you know, the other day, I didn't get in a fight. I have people do it for me. It saves my skin. No, not that I'm, you know, I will fight if I have to. But, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm just sick of it. And then, you know, I live in a decent neighborhood here. And here comes, some Mexicans. They move in and the house was looking nice. Well, the first thing they did was sandblast the house. Now we have sandblasted cars that are all, they park in the middle of their lawn.
Well, the most important thing you could do is, when you go to school, get educated. Read a lot. Read about history. You know that organizations like ours are out there, and they're, believe me, you're not the first one that's had problems. What happens in your case, it's like an infant stage right now. You put up with a problem and you're getting tired of it, which is very good. What you need to do is, you and your friends, like you say, get together and help each other out and you back each other up. And, we have a lot of, people all over in high schools that are finally doing that. They're standing as a group and they're standing tall.
Yes, but Tim, in my neighborhood, there are some Mexican Americans and they don't sandblast their house. They don't park in their front lawns. They're polite and nice people. There are some black people that live behind me. They've been there 10 years, and you'd never know they were there.
Okay.
So they're, if you can afford to buy a house in a neighborhood, it really shouldn't matter what your race is, I don't think.
Listen to me. I have, what I'm saying is, just, you know, there are good Mexicans. I'm not saying that all Mexicans are bad. But let me tell you something. The majority of the black people that I have met are not good people. You know, not that I'm putting black people down in general, which I really am.
Well, you sound like you're really angry.
Well, he's making an observation. That's the only way anybody knows anything is they go out there and they experience and they know what happens to them. And then if they speak honestly, people jump down their throat. I mean,
if you make a
racial, so-called racial slur, whatever that is,
yeah,
about blacks, the whole world, the whole roof collapses.
Right.
But they can do it to you all the time.
And get away with.
And if you jump a black person, you'll have everybody, all the police, the FBI, everything else down there. It's a race crime.
Uh-huh.
But if a black jumps you, then it's just an assault.
Well, let me tell you.
That's even an illegal alien. You know, an illegal alien has as many constitutional rights as you do.
That sucks.
If somebody jumps an illegal alien, he's a federally protected individual, and that's a federal crime. But if illegal aliens jump you and rob you, that's simple assault. You see how things are all turned upside down? We got hate laws now they're putting in. And these hate laws say, well, you can't do these things to these minorities and this and that. But they never prosecute non-whites for jumping and brutalizing whites. They never do. The DAs won't file on them. It's only when whites jump blacks or get in a fight and win the fight. It doesn't even have to be. You could be jumped by a black gang and you could win. You could be prosecuted for being involved in a hate crime. That's how George Orwellian we become in this country.
That does not make sense. It does not make sense. I don't. Why?
Well, what's great, you know, is people like Tim. These are our white youth here, and they're getting frustrated. And these are the future. These people are the future. Me and other people that I correspond with, and just white youth in general.
This is true.
And you know, we'll get good jobs, and we become lawyers, and we get into doctors and scientists and politicians. And
well, why is it, Tom? If I could interrupt here, I never have trouble with minorities. The people I have problems with are other whites.
Well, you need to get out in the street.
Out there, and also I have been teaching in a college for 38 years, and many of my students are Mexican Americans, blacks, Asian, and Indians, and I get along with all of them, and I never have problems with them. It's always some white person I have a problem with.
Well, one thing you have to understand also, Cecil, is that at times, see, you still have this cloak of white guilt.
No, I don't.
Yes,
no.
You do.
Yes, he does.
Yes, you do.
Yes,
and what you do is you don't see the things that someone like Tim or myself sees. We can go down the road and see the same thing, but we don't have white guilt anymore, and we see it, and we complain about it, and we do something about it. and get involved in organizations such as White and Resistance Youth. But you walk by because you kind of have it made. You have a job and a nice wife and a family and you have a home and you don't see the things that we do. Yes, we're a disenfranchised.
I grew up in Compton. I've seen a lot.
Yeah, but it's changed a lot. It's not like it used to be in Compton.
I believe we can get along with one another.
Well,
and I
don't believe over the long haul we can well enough to make this country put it back on top. I think what we're talking about here, because of these problems, we are slipping, and integration has not solved the problem, and it's not going to solve the problem because no one is equal. The idea of equality is a Marxist myth as far as I'm concerned. It is not true. People, even among our own race, some people are born rich, some people are born poor, some people are born with genetic problems and they get sick, other people are very healthy. When you go into a court, the rich man gets more justice than the poor man, no matter what color you are.
True.
And so anyone who keeps telling, we're all equal.
I didn't say that.
No, I don't, I know you didn't.
I said we can live together peacefully.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, usually in society, if a group is, there's either one group moving up or another group moving down. And there is power centers to, in a struggling situation. And believe me, we're not saying all blacks are bad or anything like that, or Mexicans, but I'm going to tell you, if this becomes a totally Mexicanized Southwest, they're going to make the rules, they're going to run it, and if anybody thinks they've had trouble the way it is now, wait till that happens.
Okay, and Tim, thank you for your call. Let me give that post office box again in case any of you, could you give that to them, John, in case any of people are interested in contacting your group?
And one more question before you do that.
Yeah, make it fast because we got to move on.
Do you know how I can get in contact with the KKK, or are they, do they even have any influence on our society?
Well, we'll give you an address and we can correspond through the mail and help you out on that situation.
Okay.
That's P.O. Box 65.
P.O. Box.
And that's in Fallbrook, California, 92028. And we also have a phone number, area code 619-723-8996. And that's a 24-hour message machine, and we change it every 3 days. Very up-to-date, very positive, upbeat information.
And we have phone machines all over the state of California and in some other states going, too.
Okay, thank you, Tim.
All right, take it easy.
Hey, bye. Okay, I tell you what, let's have our next group of messages from some of the good sponsors, and then we'll go to Linda, Francis, Stewart, Walter, and Frank. If the lines are busy, keep trying. We'll go right to the phone just as soon as we have these commercial words. See, what hammers away at me, too, are they've been, that the colleagues have been trying to, a member of the board is trying to influence the president to have me gotten off the air because they really don't believe in freedom of speech.
No.
That was an angry guy.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them out
there's
there.
There's thousands of them out there.
Oh,
thousands.
We say it's, you got to watch it because it's just like they're like ticking time bombs, you know. And basically, even with with the radical white youth that are getting upset like Tim, you have to fit them in their agenda because these are people that go out and eventually try to do it by themselves or with a few people. And you know, so when people like this get in touch with us, we're usually able to turn them around and give them alternatives instead of going out with a shotgun and start blowing away kids at school that have given them a hard time. So actually, people should be paying us. You know, we should be funded for a lot of stuff that we do.
Yeah, we've probably stopped more violence than we've ever been involved in. Or I know we have.
Apply for a federal grant?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a... So you were on a radio show by telephone today?
Yeah, this morning, yeah.
Which you told me, and I forgot.
Extra News in San Diego. It's pretty big. Yeah, they get out all clear up to L.A.
Well, that'd be nice. I wish I did.
That'd be good. Yeah.
I'd be off the air, though, if I got much power than I do now.
You got 50 watts here?
I think 500. Like two tin cans with a wire stretched in between. Can't believe they'd spend $5 million for a radio station and not update their transmitters and get some power in here at night, because in the daytime they're 5,000 watts.
Hmm.
And they accuse me of turning up my power to 5,000 at night. Would I do anything like that? No. Thank you for those words. This is Cecil Johnson, KCKC Talk Radio, 1350 on your AM dial, the voice of the Inland Empire. My guests this evening are Tom Metzger, the longtime leader of the White Aryan Resistance, and his son, John Metzger, who recent Geraldo Rivera show fame, and they've been on with Oprah Winfrey, Phil Donahue, you name it. These guys are big-time media personalities, and there's a lot of people watch that show and the other shows that you've been on.
To add real quick that a lot of people don't understand that we get thousands, literally thousands of phone calls and letters after every show, and now it's even filtering down to little shows like this. We get dozens of phone calls and letters. We are very popular. A lot of people support us. Don't feel like you are just one person in the whole state of California that feels this way. We are very organized. We've been around for 10 years. We have a television show. We have a lot of influence. We have lawyers.
How many shows does that television show stay? How many cities that goes into? 50 cities?
About 50 cities, and that's going to about 8 million households. So you're looking at close to about 16 million people. And so we're spreading all across the United States, and we have telephone machines, and we have updates, and we put out a newspaper, and we go out and we put out good quality, positive, upbeat, white working class literature.
And also remember this, we started out, we're just working people. I've got a little servicing business. I've been in this town for 20 years.
You got it in Fallbrook.
Yeah, that's right. And I ran for Congress, and I've done all these things with virtually very little money. So the people who say you got to be rich to get anything accomplished are wrong. It's nice to have money. Maybe sometimes you can do more, but you'd be surprised what you can do if you just put your brain to it and get to working on it.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Let's go to the telephones. Let's go to Francis in San Bernardino, Stuart, Walter, Frank, and Melvin, that order. I'll go to Linda in Redlands. I guess, who's there? Who do I have? Francis?
Francis.
Okay, and then we'll go back to Linda. Go ahead, Francis.
All right. I'd just like to ask the guys, what the purpose of their organization is. I've been hearing them talk, but I haven't got I don't understand just what they're trying to get across to the people.
We're giving white people, white working men and women and the youth, an alternative to some of the decadence we see. We have a corrupt government. We have 83,000 farmers are going to likely lose their farms here in another year. We have $5 billion, $15 billion taken away from our country that we could use for our highways and our schools and to help fight drugs, so on and so forth. And all we are is that we're white, and we have a lot of good and things that we and history that were very precious to us. And we're just like the Black Student Union, a homosexual student union, people that that form to preserve and to enhance themselves and be proud of what they are.
We do have a statement of principles also in length that when people send into our box 65 in Fallbrook 92028, we send that out to them. But basically, white working class, and I'm not saying that all people with money can't be involved but we really feel that the average white guy needs somebody to speak up, and white woman. And we expose a lot of the fraud in government. We expose the fraud in affirmative action. We expose so many things in our newspaper and things like this. But it's basically an association that just gives a damn about white people for a change.
Well, what in the heck can you do whenever a Mexican woman fires you, me, a white woman, without no reason whatsoever?
Well, it happens all the time now, and of course the only way it can change is if enough people like you, and you're not alone, that's what we keep trying to tell people, you're not alone, begin to think about yourself and think about yourself as a race.
Well, just what can you do? I called the labor board, I called the president of the Fontana Arts Association, and he said, well, there's nothing we can do. He said, we give her the authority to fire or hire whoever she wants to.
Well,
and, the labor board said the same thing, said they can fire you for no reason at all if they want to.
But I found when white people finally get it up to here, and we're going to have to go through some more tough times. It's not going to be solved overnight. But I'll tell you what, there's no more dangerous person on the face of the earth than Whitey when he gets his back up. So Whitey will back up to the wall, and he'll take a hell of a beating. But I'm telling you, when Whitey gets his back up and really starts to move, things change real fast. So don't get discouraged, because there's a big hell of a backlash coming in this country.
It's not then that you object to mixed marriages or anything like that.
Well, no, we ideologically believe in separation. We do not believe in mixed marriages,
well,
no.
I don't either.
Okay, thank you, Francis.
Okay.
So bye-bye.
So bye-bye.
Okay, let's go now to Linda in Redlands. Linda in Redlands, you're on with Tom and John Metzger.
Oh.
Okay, that's the belcher. He comes on every night.
Well, he must drink Schaefer's beer, probably.
That's Linda. The guy is a faggot. Go ahead. Go ahead. More, please. Come on. Really stretch it out.
Is that a left-wing belch?
Yeah, the guy's a real lefty, a real pinko.
I see. Okay. Well,
and also a half-wit, well, but I'm getting so I kind
of
like
is
it.
Is that freedom of belch or
yeah.
freedom of speech?
Every night he comes on under some other name and does that. Normally I lose my temper, but since it's every night under some other name, I'm just getting used to it.
Everybody's got to have their little thing.
Yeah, well, he's also has high heels, garter belts, and a wig, so we know where he's coming from.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Stuart on line 2B. Stuart, good evening. You're on with the Metzgers.
Yes, Cecil, I'm still here listening. I mentioned once before about 18 years ago when I went back to the school in Philadelphia to visit some of my old teachers. And I was talking to the principal, Mrs. Eisenhower, there. And out in the hall, there were a group of about 35 children. Now, these were mostly white. And at the end, there were two large colored children. And Mrs. Eisenhower told me that those two on the end made this group of children pay them every day to let them come to school. And she said, we are not allowed to say anything about it because the school board and all does not want this to be publicized. Well, now, this was 18 or 19 years ago.
Well, that's why we tell white kids to organize. If they got these mealy-mouthed, yellow, cowardly principals and school administrators and so forth that are not fair and just, then kids need to organize and expose these people. Don't take their crap on the campus or any place else.
Well, it was the same thing, Tom. When I was 9 years old in Philadelphia, we couldn't go to the movies because a block away from the movies would be these larger colored children, and they would stop us and take our money away from us, so we couldn't even go to movies unless we went in a game.
Well, I want to.
This was 50 years ago.
Yeah, but I'll tell you one thing. Well, you know, that's why you got to get a bigger gang, and then you walk down the street with no problem, you see.
Yes, but what you're talking about are people, the street people that are in a minority of blacks or what have you, the majority of blacks would not do these kinds of things.
How could it be the minority, though?
Yeah,
because all the phone calls we're getting tonight differs with you. It's always, you got the schools and you got the streets. So that's white guilt again coming out, and you always justify things.
Well, I think it's just because I like people. I like the human race.
Yeah,
I'm not based upon race.
But the problem, you don't have the leaders of the black people and race, for the most part, criticizing their own people. White people, white leaders continually criticize white people. White people shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that, shouldn't do that. But when blacks do the same thing, their own leaders, their own preachers, in many cases, not all cases, will never criticize them. They'll say, oh, well, that's the reason he does that's because he's been exploited. The reason he's been that, he's been oppressed. Every excuse in the world that whites don't get to take. But many blacks do, and the highest leaders in the country, and look at Jesse Jackson, people like that, no matter what blacks do, it's because they're oppressed, and at one time, way back, they were slaves. Whenever you get into that kind of making excuses for your actions in everything you do, you got problems. And it's not going to help black people, I'll tell you that.
No, well, on top of that now, I went to Philadelphia when I was about 8 years old, and I came from Virginia. And I had to fight almost every day that I went to school. But Cecil does have a point. The majority of the colored children there in the school, after I beat so many of them, they all joined with me. Like, and I had as many colored on my side as I had against me, and they would do my fighting for me.
Well, people do respect strength, that's for sure. And you either have it or you don't have it.
And I mean, Tom, see, this goes back 50 years ago.
Okay, and Stuart, we want to thank you for your calls. We got a lot of them, and thank you again, Stuart. Bye, buddy. Okay, that was Stuart. Let's go now to, I guess I got to Linda and Redlands a while ago, didn't I? Mm-hmm. I think I did. Let's go to Walter. I got a couple open lines out there. My guest this evening is Tom Metzger, a national leader and longtime leader of the White Area in Resistance, and his son, John Metzger, who was recently become a kind of a national television celebrity for kneeing Roy Innes in the groin, who was trying to strangle him from Congress of Racial Equality. Let me give the telephone numbers. Got a few openings now. 877-1350, 877-5252, 824-1045, and toll free from Highland, 882-2577. John, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
You, Roy Innes, the guy that tried to strangle you and mm-hmm. then your bodyguards and you were punching away on him.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't hate one another. Is this a stage thing? Because you guys could probably move on a lecture tour of college and university campuses around the United States like G. Gordon Liddy did and others and do a lecture tour of the country,
well,
slugging away at one another.
We're working that way now. Like I said, it was raining sweet for Geraldo.
Wait a minute. Don't let him give him the wrong idea. You're not working with Roy Innes.
No, not in that fact. No, we're trying to get into the universities and speak, but definitely not with Roy Innes.
Oh, I see, because you guys had this and you have Roy Innes is likes to get in these fights.
Well, Roy's having a problem with his own organization. I wouldn't be surprised if he retired, because I think he got a lot of flack from that. He doesn't represent blacks well. As a matter of fact, I've gotten a lot of phone calls and letters from people saying when they saw that, they went out and beat the hell out of a black man. So, actually, the blacks...
I got a letter today from a black woman that said Innes is a ridiculous guy, and she really felt bad that he did what he did, too.
I think it boils down to the point again, and, you know, I will quote Martin Luther King here, who said, either we learn to live together like brothers or we die together like fools. And I don't call that white guilt. I just
but
don't
why did
see.
You move out of Compton then? Why
well, because you move I got here? I got a job out here in Riverside at the college. That's why I left Compton. Admittedly, I had an opportunity to go to that college, but I preferred to come out to Riverside where there are orange groves and things of this nature.
I am amused, though, not in your case, but in some thousands, tens of thousands of people moving out of the cities, getting out where we're at, out there in northern San Diego County.
And Fallbrook.
And from Orange County, from L.A., they're coming in there like mad. It's almost gridlocked now down here. And all these people, if you ask them, well, why'd you move here? Oh, it's just a nice weather, and oh, it's this and that. I know why they're moving out of the cities. The cities are coming apart. L.A. County is destroying
itself. But that's mainly based on the massive invasion of illegal aliens,
it's a lot of us. Minorities in totality that can't support the tax base and whitey's just going to move out because basically whites would like to be with whites, I think, and I don't think that's being hypocritical at all.
Okay, let's go to some telephones here. Let's go to Walter and then to Frank in Riverside and to Melba in Highland. And then to Laughing Rick and David in Rialto. We're all lined up here. Let's go back to the phones. Walter, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. You're on with Tom and John Metzger.
Good evening, Cecil, and good evening to your two guests.
Good evening.
Hey, I want to ask you a couple of two or three questions, and they won't be long. Don't you feel that the American people are being shamed for the guilt of the problems of America? That is the...
Well, that's a national sport in this country, is guilt. Anytime you want to pass a law, get taxes or anything else, you say, oh, you're guilty of this, you're guilty of that. It's a combination of politicians and churches and everybody else that's got the American people, and especially the white people, white middle class and white poor, it's the national sport, is feeling guilty about something. And the one thing you got to do is get that guilt off your mind. Get out. You don't owe anybody anything, and take care of your own, you know?
Yes. Well, I don't feel guilty of anything, but, you know, the thing is I can see what's coming. It's just like, for instance, here, you're familiar with the Genocide Treaty. I think the Genocide Treaty, the man from Wisconsin, I think he shamed the congressmen and senators into approving that, and then the president signed it. And why should we have approved that? Because that's just ruining our sovereignty, we're losing our, it's going to supersede the big part of our country.
Well, let me,
is that right?
Let me tell you something. It just happened. This, John Domenjek, who was accused of being a so-called Nazi war criminal, which there's a tremendous evidence that he's not, was taken out of this country with the agreement of our own government, taken to Israel. He was put on a show trial over there. And just today, one of his attorneys, who happened to be Israeli and Jew, I believe, committed suicide because of the miscarriage of justice. The other man went to his funeral today, and one of these so-called Holocaust survivors threw acid in his face. And so this is what you're looking towards in the future, taking American citizens to Russia, to Israel, wherever.
That's genocide, right?
Yeah, and they'll come up with something that you insulted somebody, and they'll take you before a tribunal in a foreign country.
Okay.
But it's our leaders' fault. It's not anyone else's fault. It's our leaders' fault that don't protect their own citizens.
I would think so, too.
Okay, thank you, Walter.
Now, just one more question.
Yeah, okay, make it fast.
The other thing I was going to ask you is, I don't think there's any place in the world where this thing has been built, only in America. Now, the Holocaust Center was built in America. Why was it built in America? Why wasn't it built over in Germany? I don't think we should be made to feel ashamed and shameless for what has happened over there.
The thing that bothers me is, if you ask any kid in school how many American soldiers died in World War II, none of them know. But they all know, supposedly, how many Jewish people died. But if you ask them how many people in total died in World War II, they don't know that either. Actually, about 55 million people died. The United States doesn't have to feel guilty about anything as far as that's concerned. We lost tens of thousands of young men over there fighting in that war, and the richest Jews in this country didn't lift a finger to save Jews anyhow, so I don't know what they're talking about. And so, but here it comes back, always guilt. And so now we're giving Israel $5 billion a year, and I'm trying to figure what for. I mean, what we didn't do anything wrong, so let's get off that trip.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Walter.
Bye.
Thank you, bye. Okay, that was Walter. Let's go to Frank, then to Melvin, then to Laughing Rick, then to David, to Cecil Johnson, KCKC Talk Radio, 1350 on your AM dial, San Bernardino, Riverside, California, the free speech station. It won't be free speech when I'm gone, however, that's another problem which we won't discuss tonight. I'm not too popular with the fat cats here in San Bernardino, Riverside, because I've been jumping the fat cats just like you have. More money has been concentrated into the hands of fewer and fewer people.
That's why we like you, Cecil.
Let's go to, not that I agree with all the things you say.
Well, hell, I don't trust a man who agrees with everything I say.
No, I still think we can get along together here in America. You guys don't seem to think so. Let's go to Frank in Riverside. Frank, you're on with Tom and John.
Hello, Tom, John. I'm glad somebody's bearing the white standard without apologies, kissing everybody's ass every time they turn around. I tell you, what we really need for these younger people is don't study history. They better study current events. You see, we live today. See, we're living now. We can't live in the past. That ain't going to do us a damn bit of good.
That's true. They're getting a perfect education by going through the public schools.
But I tell you, we didn't want to grace my butt. Like Cecily made such a big issue of it a while back, about all these here illegal immigrants coming in here, and they're being assigned to the universities. Everything's being paid for and really nice. But I'll tell you one thing. The white guy can keep running, but he ain't going to be able to hide forever.
Exactly. That's why we're organizing right now. And white people are real tolerant, and we've reached the stage to where our back is basically up against the wall, and we're organizing, and it's the youth that's doing it now, and we're the leaders of tomorrow, and we're organizing, and we're very disciplined, we're very positive, upbeat organization working for white working men and women. So we're very proud, and we love our families and our history and our culture.
You see, that's right. And You know, old Kipling said it right. East is east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet, because it isn't natural.
Kipling wrote a lot of other good ones, too. Beware when the white man gets his back up, too. And I forget that poem. I've read it many times, because, you know, the myth is that the white man has been this horrible, terrible oppressor. you'll find that most minorities are so-called, non-whites and countries have oppressed each other and oppressed themselves, and the Indians killed each other like mad on this continent and everything else.
Well, I'm sure they did.
Read the book Crimson Prairie. I mean, there was genocide among the Indian tribes even before the white man got here. So all of this stuff. So white man has brought a hell of a lot of civilization, and in places like India where people want to kill each other, he was the moderating force, and people, and he brought government in there and was able to keep these people working together.
I want to ask you a question, Tom and John.
Mm-hmm.
If you was on 7th at Broadway on a crowded afternoon, how many people do you think you'd see there who hadn't been for the white doctors, their cure for smallpox, diphtheria, and all them damn diseases? How many people do you think you'd see there?
Not very many.
You're damn right.
I'll tell you right now that black...
I'll tell you, you know, the next time a guy gets, you know, he hates the, you know, the white man's civilization, you got to have one of those there wisdom teeth pulled, you know?
Yes.
Go down and get it pulled, the old prehistoric way. They used to crack you on the head. If you lived through that, they'd pull your tooth.
Yeah, you know.
How would they like that? I wonder if they ever stopped to thank us for anything.
Well, they don't. In fact, some of them even deny we created it. But received very interesting film that came to me from Africa itself, produced by a British film company. I couldn't believe what's happening in Africa. In all these countries, of course, they've been fighting each other in war and killing each other. And I thought once they got the white man out, everything was going to be hunky-dory. But all they do is kill each other and eat each other. But now they got AIDS over there, and they're predicting 70% of the blacks in Africa are going to die within the next decade or so. 70%.
That's our fault, too.
The conservative thing, they say maybe 50%. And now there's even people blaming that on us, too, on the white people. Somehow we did that. So.
Well, I tell you, Tom, I'm an old merchant seaman. I went to sea for 28 years. I've lived 2 years in China. I've lived in India, and I know what the hell I'm talking about when Kipling says east is east and west is west.
And with those words, Frank, we're going to say good evening.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
Good night, Charlie. Good night there,
seaman.
Okay, let's go to Melva, Laughing Rick, David, and Bigfoot in that order. All right, let me hit the right button here. Melvin Highland, you're on with Tom and his son, John Metzger.
Oh, hi, Cecil.
Good evening.
I'd like to let Tom and John, if they ever researched how many countries that you can't buy anything unless you're a citizen. I know Mexico won't let you.
Real estate, yes. There's almost no country in the world that you can go in and do like you do in the United States. I don't think there is any other country where foreign people can come in and just buy up the country like they're doing here. The Japanese.
The fears is we're getting bought up by the Arabs and the Japanese and
yeah, and also
the cartel and everything.
There's another group that's sort of odd people don't know, and that's some of the big shots in Britain. The fat cats in Britain have been buying up America like mad too, and these are the same people that have pauperized their people in Britain. And the rich are really getting richer in Britain, and the poor are getting poorer. And so those are some of the same guys that are coming over here buying up stuff along with Japanese, Arabs, and almost the whole downtown L.A. now is owned by foreign people.
Well, 20% of all the high-rise buildings in downtown L.A. is owned by the Japanese.
Yes.
I mean,
so
Japanese nationals.
You know, and right after the election now, we saw the prime interest rate go up, and that means there's less money loaned out, and that means they're tightening up on the money, and 80,000 farmers facing foreclosure. More and more people dropping through the cracks, and I think the Democrats took a fall this time. I think they did it on purpose. I think they put up a loser candidate on purpose. I don't think the Democrats wanted to be in because there's going to be a crash of some type, and so they want the Republicans to be in to take the fall.
Well,
so that's a point.
And you said there's more white people on welfare?
Well, there's more poor white people, and so many white people are too proud to take welfare. However, I tell people, hey, get out there and get yours before the minorities.
Well, I have food stamps and Medi-Cal because of my disability.
Take them. Get them. Get all you can.
If you go down there to 5th and E Street and go in that building, you'll see almost all black and all Chicano.
That's right, and I tell white poor people, I don't say to live off the dole, but get out there and get what's yours, because if you don't get it, these people are going to get it. And don't feel ashamed about it. Your forefathers earned it, and your forefathers fought in these wars, and by God, get down and get what's yours.
Okay, thank you for your call, Melba.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, then we got to move on, yeah.
My son got kicked out of school. He was 5 credits ahead, was going to graduate in June. and a group of 25 blacks jumped four whites, and they couldn't identify all the blacks, and because my son wouldn't identify, he got told he had to leave the school.
Well, we hear these kind of stories. If you hear one or two or know of two or three things like that, we could tell you of hundreds, thousands. This country is almost in a state of urban guerrilla warfare right now, not only for the drugs, but the racial thing is heating up because, you know what's happening? Whites are getting tired of taking it. Whites are beginning to fight back. And I hear all these people screaming now. Say, oh, my God, these young people are fighting back in the streets. How horrible that is. And it's really got them upset and on the run.
Okay, thank you, Melva.
Can I say one more
thing? Yeah, we got to move on. Thank you.
Well, we're out in the country, and they built apartments all around out here, and they're almost all filled up with black.
Is it subsidized housing by the government out in that area, or is it?
I'm not sure.
People have to have some place to live.
But this is a white neighborhood, little neighborhood, and now it's full of black.
Oh, my neighborhood was white, and now we have people of different minorities living in it, and if they can pay the price of the houses that on the street I live in, then I figure they know how to behave themselves, and that's the way it is.
When we lived in Rialto, I had a white dentist next door to me that made more trouble than the black family that lived on the other side of me.
Okay, and we want to thank you.
I'm not saying that all blacks are bad or all Hispanics are bad or anything. Okay. I'm just saying, geez, give us a chance.
I don't think we have to preface everything with that stuff that I know a good black person or I know this guy or that guy. We should be able to stand up for our race and not see we're always apologizing. I know these people are nice people and all that. We don't have to do that if we don't want to. You shouldn't have to do that. That's a mark of guilt right there.
Okay, thank you for your call.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to David down in Rialto, then the Laughing Rick and the Bigfoot. David on line 2B in Rialto. Go ahead, David. You're on with Tom and John. Are you there, David?
Yes, I'm here, Cecil.
Go ahead. You're on the air, David.
Oh, Dave. This is David from Rialto. I'm going to follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Louis Farquhar. I was glad to have Metzger. I know Metzger donated to Minister Farquhar campaign once. He only donated $1 or so.
It was a $100 bill.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, and that's great because we do have some of the same beliefs. And some of the white kids, some of the black kids, I keep hearing they calling up, but they're just real weak kids. That's the reason that they're being beat up by the black kids. And I really think that they're just real weak kids, the reason that they're being beat up. And kids are always going to be beat up. Don't care whether they're white or black or what color they are.
Well, that's true.
These kids, some of these black kids are in gangs now, and they are more aggressive. They are more gun-toters. They're more violent, so, that's just the way things are right now. The skinheads, I really have very little threat from them, because I know some friends went and slapped a couple of them the other day, and they were still swiveling little cowards.
I wouldn't try that with some of the ones I know.
Well, that's what I did. This was down in L.A.
But you know something?
David hit a point here. Whenever you're weak, you're going to get your head kicked on the streets.
I agree.
No matter what color you are.
And I believe if you walk tall or walk strong, people leave you alone.
During the war, during Vietnam, there was these gangs out of Chicago. I was in Vietnam, and the gangs out of Chicago was the Blackstone Rangers and the Disciples. Everybody wanted to be in a gang that had, everybody wanted to be in a company that had these guys in them, because they know that these guys were strong, they knew how to use weapons, and they wasn't afraid to kill. So, that's the way things are. Now, as for the whites that's called in saying that, we don't have this, or we getting fired. I think they should be fired, some of them. The lady that got fired, I think she should be fired. Whites were in control. They don't have no control no more. Whites are in charge right now. You're the one giving the country to the Japanese and the Jews.
I agree with you right there. I do agree with you, and that's what I keep hammering away at. Our problem is primarily with white people, but whites keep going out and voting for these people like Bush and stuff, think he's going to save their ass, and these guys just rob them. And I think a lot of times blacks are sharper, and they can see these clowns and these crooks clearer than a lot of white people. And it really bugs me that a lot of times I have a black person has to point it out how whites are continually conned by other whites. And it's a white civil war is what we're into.
And one thing you said, I heard you on the on KFI, which was with Tom Lankus, I guess.
Yes.
And he said, I mean, you said, you clarified about the welfare. Now, Cecil is one that's always going off on the welfare system. If you cut out the welfare system, you're going to hurt quite a few whites on it. You take myself.
I'd sterilize them. I wouldn't just cut them off.
I spent 20 years in the military. I'm a minority. I was first in getting a good government job after I retired from the military, and now I have a government job with the FHA, and I'm not worried about anything. So if I'm a black person that can do it, the swiveling little whites that's around that can't get jobs in your own country, what's wrong with you? And I'm with a with the Nation of Islam, we take care of our own. The only other blacks that's out here that's crying, that want welfare, is the one that's not, can't help themselves. And if they would join the Nation of Islam and join Minister Farrakhan, we would take care of them because we have money. I have money. I'm not hurting for money none whatsoever. And I'm
David, are you one of the fruits of Islam?
I'm one of the fruits of Islam. I believe in the defense of the Nation of Islam, and I've always worked with them because I have a military background, and I'm not afraid to shoot the gun.
That's good, and I think that people should stick together like that, and you should be respected for it. And I believe it's the same way on the other side. And here again, I keep hammering away at the white elite in this country, and the big corporation leaders are primarily white that have sold their own people out, the white poor in this country. And so we have problems on the street many times with blacks and so forth like that with each other on those. But at the top, blacks are not running the country. We know that. We don't have a black president, black governor, all this kind of stuff. It's white people who don't give a damn about their own white people.
They're making the country very weak, very weak.
Of course,
the Japanese are coming in with the money. I don't think the Japanese are really a weak people. They're very smart.
No, and they stick together. They're homogeneous people. They're racially a very, I don't like to use the word pure, but they do not marry out of their race very often.
Yes, and that's something that the Nation of Islam is never believed in. We had for a while it was.
But David, could I interrupt you a minute? How come I can never get you Fruits of Islam to come on the radio and tell us what you're all about?
Well, you have to talk to some of the leaders.
Well, that's what you told me the last time, and I haven't heard from you.
I gave you his number, and maybe
you better give me the number again. Call me at home if you would, and we'll have a show some night.
All right.
Okay. Thank you for your thoughts, David.
All right.
Okay. Bye. Okay, that was David from the Nation of Islam. Let's go to Cecil Johnson, KCKC Talk Radio, 1350 on your AM dial, the voice of the Inland Empire. My guest again, appearing on more national television and radio shows probably than anyone here. Better punch that off there. Let's go to Bigfoot. Bigfoot, you're on. Bigfoot, are you there? Maybe I haven't punched the line. Bigfoot, are you there?
Hello, Cecil.
Oh, go ahead. You're on with the Metzgers.
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
I recognize
what's your political affiliation.
I'm still a registered Democrat, believe it or not. I ran for Congress on a Democrat ticket.
Yeah, I want you to know when you run again, I'm going to vote for you and I'm going to campaign for you because, you know, I listen to you to try to find some way to pick a fight out of you. And I just can't find anything, you know?
Well, that's good. Then we're communicating. That's the main thing. And that's what I like about these smaller stations around the country. You get some time to talk to people and get your views straight. And even though we have, obviously, everyone disagrees on some things.
Well, you know, it's going to take someone like yourself that's got the balls to lead this country out of the chaos that it's in. And you might not live to see it, but I think it'll be a massacre in the White House one day.
Well, gee whiz, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. We're going to do everything we can to see that somebody that feels like we do does get there sometime.
You know, I don't know. I was wondering, you know, how Tom or John Metzger would do if you could kind of incorporate yourself into a rainbow coalition. Because what you said for whites, you know, it appeals to everybody. You know, I'm not a racial separatist, but then again, I don't hold it against someone who is, like David, the Muslim just talked to you. You know, his views and yours are a lot the same. And it's going to take a coalition of people with ideas that knows how to get the pencil neck geeks that are running this country down, and that's what's happening to this country.
Well, we do have a situation with an economic struggle. At the same time, we have, we believe, a racial struggle. So it's two struggles going on at the same time. And many views on economics are shared by blacks, whites, and other people in this country. So that goes on at the same time as the racial argument goes on, too. So you're right.
Well, I'm going to keep my eyes on you, Tom. And like I said, I came by the studio earlier, but I didn't see no way of getting in. I wanted to meet you and your son. Okay, I'm going to let you go. Maybe somebody else want to get in. And that's Cecil Johnson. You know, he supports you also, but he's afraid and he don't have the balls to say so because Irv Rubin would beat the hell out of him. Good night, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Bigfoot. Okay, I guess we're coming to the end of the evening. We're not going to be able to get to Laughing Rick, my guest this evening, and because I have people on, I agree with some people in some ways, but as you know, you say I'm a white apologist, but I still believe that the different races in America can get along with one another. You guys don't think we can?
Not over the long haul. I mean, I have all the respect in the world for other racial groups. I can go to another country and visit them. I think Japan's great. I like to go over there and meet with the people and enjoy their society. But I like to come home, too, to my white society.
And we're running out of time. I want to thank Tom and John for being on this evening. You'll come back again. God bless you all, and good night.
You.